This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello and welcome to this Joy podcast series. This audio series has been made possible with the generous support of Lesbians Incorporated Australia through its community grant scheme, which has provided over $170,000 to a range of projects throughout Australia that target discrimination against lesbians and raise the profile of lesbians among the wider community. My name's Dee Mason and I'll be your host throughout this four-part series in which I speak to lesbian women who came out later in life. And if you're now asking yourself if you qualify as a later-in-life lesbian, we better give this some definition. Everybody I spoke to for this podcast series has a different take on what a later-in-life lesbian actually means. But we all agree on one thing. It's a woman that has a whole other life and sexual identity before coming out as lesbian. It is important to note right off the bat that Lesbians Inc. supports women who identify as women and are welcoming of folks who are male to female, trans and non-binary. They're inclusive of people who identify as lesbian, dyke, gay, bisexual, queer and asexual, acknowledging that we all may move between these groups. Part one in this four-part series on later in life lesbians is my chat with Joy94.9's CEO Ange Barry.
My name's Ange Barry. I'm 54 years of age and I came out as a lesbian at the age of 33.
What year was that, Ange?
And that would be 1999.
Amazing. And you're still here. You're still at it.
I'm still at it.
Yep. Let me ask you, back it up and ask you about your upbringing. Where, who, with, what was it like?
I grew up in Melbourne, actually in Heidelberg, literally on the banks of the Yarra River. If you know Heidelberg well, Warringal Park was my backyard. We used to go fishing in the river. I was a bit of a tomboy, was the term back then, and used to go fishing down there and loved it. I'm one of seven kids. I'm the youngest. And I have a mum and a dad who still actually live in the family home in Heidelberg. Had a pretty self-sufficient upbringing, I would describe it as, because I was one of seven. And so my brothers and sisters used to refer to me as Cousin It because nobody was allowed to touch my very long and wild hair. And I spent most of my life playing in the park, doing that sort of stuff, coming home when my stomach determined it was time for food.
Happy childhood. And did that inform the importance of family in your life?
Look, it definitely did. Having a tribe was something that was ingrained in me, not necessarily by family saying a tribe's important. But for me, you know, I was running as one of a pack, a pretty big pack. And having people around all the time was something that was so part of my sense of who I am, you know, my sense of being. And even now at 54, I look back and think, that's why I don't like it when there's no one around. And that's why I found COVID hard, because I grew up in a pack.
Was religion part of your family? And if so, what colour of religion?
Yeah, look, it absolutely was. I'm a recovering Catholic. My mum has a very strong faith and, you know, was really keen for us all to be educated in the Catholic system. Quite unusually, my father actually worked for the Archdiocese of Melbourne as an accountant and saw some very interesting things during his time there. He's totally a recovering Catholic. We were given free choice at about the age of 16, I think. You know, you don't have to go to Mass anymore, but you know, up until that point, we went every week. So it was pretty full on. From the age of 16, I didn't, and, you know, moved away from the religion from that point onwards in my life.
Do you feel, Ange, that religion, and certainly Catholic religion, informed your view of sexuality early on?
Yeah, I think it did. I think that, you know, from a very young age, I had that wrestle between my primal instincts, my primal urges, and what religion was saying about, you know, normality, for want of a better word, and practice and what that all meant. So I think it had a huge, huge impact. And I know that for lots of people, the guilt that was taught in part of the, you know, as part of the Catholic religion, around sinning or, you know, doing the wrong thing, was really pervasive, you know, in your thinking and in your behaviour.
And sexuality is not about your choice of whether or not you identify as heterosexual or homosexual. Sexuality generally in the Catholic Church was a sin.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you know, as young people you were taught that, you know, masturbation was a sin and that sort of stuff.
So, well, that is a sin, Ange.
Oh, D, it's a necessity, let's phrase it. Yeah, look, you know, for sure, you know, people were discouraged in having sex before marriage and all this sort of stuff that really tried to suppress your natural primal sexual urges and you as a sexual being.
You're 54 years old. You came out at
32.
And that was 22 years ago.
Yes.
What year was that?
That would be 1998.
Oh, now.
That can't be right. I think it was 1999.
I've got an abacus.
So maybe I've made a mistake there.
Ange Barry, close your eyes and have it, just listen to your internal ears. What track is playing on the radio the year you come out? Think of all that drama, the debacle. What are you dancing to? What are you listening to?
A song by, I think it's a group called Baby Bird from the UK called You're Gorgeous.
Remember that tank top you bought?
It was introduced to me from the person I started a relationship with, a same-sex relationship, and she was working in radio in the UK, and Baby Bird was in the charts at the time, and I'm pretty sure, well, no, I'm not going to say it has gay undertones because I think it was about modelling, actually, but it's a fantastic song about sense of self-esteem and, you know, who you are.
It's got gay undertones now, that's for absolutely sure. And do you identify as lesbian now?
Well, I think so, Dee. This is always a bit of a mystery to me. I almost feel like I need to be diagnosed or something, you know, and I know that's a negative word. I don't mean that. Maybe I need to be discovered or... But, you know, I grew up, if I reflect back on my childhood, I think I was born bisexual because I found both, if I'm little and regressing to childhood, girls and boys attractive. Mm-hmm. As an adult, men and women attractive. I was, you know, married and, you know, had... beautiful family. When the marriage ended, that's when I decided I could explore, you know, my sexuality as far as women were concerned, and I did. And now I'm in a long-term relationship with a woman, and, you know, if I'm honest, I prefer to be with women than men. So if that's what the definition of a lesbian is, then I'm a lesbian. If it's what bisexual is, but choosing to be with women, I'm that as well. I don't know. I don't think I need a label, but
let's talk about labels. Do you? Yep. How do you go with the term dyke?
I don't like that term if it's used, you know, on me, because the times it's been used on me have been times of criticism or negativity. So, you know, I find that offensive.
Lezzo?
Yeah, similarly. I find that offensive, you know.
How about the term queer? Do you roll with that ever?
Yeah, I actually really like the term queer. But I also respect and understand that some people don't and they find it quite offensive. But to me, queer is actually a positive term, which means unique.
Yeah, because you and I are of the same vintage and I've struggled with the term queer for all of my upbringing. But now that I work at Joy and I meet lots of people who identify as queer, I see how they celebrate that term and how and they find it inclusive. And so to that end, I think, well, if they're not offended, I would not call a 60-year-old man queer.
Yeah.
Gay man, queer.
Yeah.
Do you consider transgender women have rights and access to gendered female space?
Are you asking me do I think they do have rights or... Yeah, well, yes, they should have rights.
Yeah.
Do they currently have rights? It seems to vary, quite frankly. But should they? Absolutely.
Do you know anybody that you would identify as a TERF?
To me, you know, transgender women belong with women, if that's the right way to articulate it.
So now there's so very few women-only spaces and I wonder if the young queer people don't need that space or just don't have access to it.
One of the places I used to go and really enjoy going when I first came out was Blonde on the Rocks, you know, and that was a women-only space.
Yep.
And, you know, I found it really comfortable to be in a nightclub where there weren't men, you know, sort of, I suppose, being curious about women interacting with women. It was women-only and that felt really good and safe. So I think that social space is really important.
Tell us about your life before you identified as lesbian or bi.
My life before, you know, identifying, you know, as queer, if for want of a better word. I grew up, went to school, whatever, social friends, had boyfriends, married, had kids, that sort of thing. But along the way was attracted to women, you know, and got, you know, close to some of those women, but really didn't sort of take it any further because of that feeling of, I think, guilt and being wrong and not acceptable. And so quite a bit of confusion, to be honest, you know, growing up as to, right, okay, one part of my body is saying I'm attracted to that and that's okay, that's acceptable. Another part saying I'm attracted to that, but that's actually not okay and that should be suppressed and that's not healthy.
How old were your children when you decided that you had to take action?
My marriage broke up when my youngest was 8 months old and my oldest was 29 months old. So I literally had a toddler and a baby, and it was a really difficult time emotionally, you know, going through that. But when I sort of picked myself up again and I started to think about what does the future hold, and that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to, you know, explore this other side of me. So by that stage, I guess my kids were 6 months on, maybe a bit more, you know, maybe longer actually. So they were still little, you know, they were still little kids. And, you know, they have always had their dad and then their dad's new partner and their dad's new kids, well, not new, it's not the right word, but, you know, dad's other kids in their life. That has always been a family unit, and we've always interacted really healthily. So, you know, the family's gone across both of us. But my girls actually grew up, you know, with their, you know, the family they spent the majority of time with, two women, two mums. Yep. And so it was really interesting because my kids have been raised with knowing that there's alternative family styles, including a straight family is one alternative, you know, a gay family is another. And I think for them that's a really rich, rich experience.
Was your sexuality a catalyst for the marriage breakdown? Tell me if I'm prying. Or was it coincidental to it?
No, it wasn't the catalyst for it. It was not even coincidental. It was more, the relationship has ended. I now have choice to explore all of me.
Yep.
So it certainly wasn't a factor in the marriage breakdown. And yeah, it was just, I guess, okay, if I'm starting my life again in some ways, I can make different choices and I'm going to explore that.
What does a dating scene look like when you're 32 and you've got two very, very small children and you haven't been in the lesbian scene before?
It was really weird for me, a couple of reasons, and this is going to sound a bit strange, but I was living in the northeastern suburbs of Melbourne, so there was not a gay scene there, you know, there was at all from what I knew anyway. And I had to discover, well, what do I do? I mean, all my friends are parents or not, but they're all straight. Mm. I hadn't actually met a lot of gay people, wasn't mixing in those circles. So it was like a discovery, and my friend back then was the computer. Even back then, you know, Yahoo had started chats around bi-curious women and that sort of thing. And so I was like, oh, Yahoo, okay, right, I'll jump on and start looking and see what it means. So it was like kind of going to primary school again. Was there
any LGBT radio station?
Well, had I heard of Joy? I probably had back then. I'm just trying to think. Did I have a lot of time to listen? No. I had two little kids. So my life, my social life happened every second weekend, literally, back then. You know, obviously the heartache of saying goodbye to two babies every weekend was enormous because I was with them every minute of every day. So it was so strange and felt almost unnatural initially. And then to, I suppose, focus on myself and be forced to focus on myself, which, you know, when there's little kids around, you don't get a lot of time to do that. It was a little bit of a gift, to be honest, because it was like, okay, well, who am I? You know, who am I on this second weekend and what am I doing? And so I could sort of explore that. And it was an interesting time.
At the age of 32, did you enter what we all see in some people who come to lesbianism later in life? Did you go super hard? Like the second adolescence?
Yeah. Look, I had fun and met, you know, interesting people, and probably quicker than, you know, in hindsight, one should. I did get into a relationship and it became a long-term relationship. It was fun at the time, and I met a lot of women, and even online, you know, like online, it was interesting because what I realised was, you know, there was a lot of lesbian women, you know, like me, and at that time, and, you know, if we need to use a label, lesbian for sure. You know, women based in Sydney, you know, who were in like really sort of high corporate roles and whatever, there was an underground scene. Mm. There was totally an underground scene, and I tripped over that, and it was educational.
Tripped over, fell into.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me, just in terms of the actual process of coming out, who's the first person that you told, and how did that go?
My sister, yeah. I told my sister. So the way I came out was, when I started a relationship, I actually met someone online who was living overseas. And that person, I went and visited that person and thought, And then that person came to Australia and I introduced her to my sister. And my sister was beautiful because I actually didn't really articulate it. You know, she came around with a bunch of flowers. She met the woman and, you know, just told me she loved me. And it went from there. And I really never had the coming out day of saying to people, so I'm a lesbian now. That's me.
Yeah.
It wasn't like that. I said, this is my partner. And it was a woman. And, you know, my family were beautiful. They had their own processing moments to go through. My dad was, I love you no matter who you are. Wow. Mum, you know, was always loving. I think for her, she was the more, you know, devoted Catholic. So for her, it took a bit of time to process, but she never let me see that. She kept that to herself. And I was like, you know, that's fantastic. And I was sort of, I'm not taking prisoners, if that makes sense, back then, because, you know, I'd survived a marriage breakup and two kids. Like, my life changed enormously. So I think I was in the headspace of love me or not sort of thing. And it was also compounded with, in my family, my brother died quite young. We'd been through the trauma of that. And I think for my family, it was, she's alive. We love her. Let's just get with this. And they did.
Absolutely. Tell me, Ange, when you realise that, oh, now I'm going to have to come out now because this relationship that I'm fostering with this woman overseas is a real thing, what was your greatest fear about being a lesbian, and did it come to fruition?
I didn't have a lot of fear, and I think part of that was the way I grew up. I was always, you know, hanging around my brothers and stuff like that. I was very confident. I almost had that very strong of, you know, this is me and this is who I am and, you know, like, love it or leave it sort of thing. So I didn't have a lot of fear, but maybe around the kids actually, and people judging me about my parenting with my children and, say, the school environment, you know, and how perhaps some people who were closed-minded might react. Did it come to fruition? Once or twice it did. And, you know, there was one person, and we all know this story, I'm sure this woman was questioning her own sexuality and, you know, just started rumours about myself and my kids and stuff. And it was, you know, all of the other community came around us and were like, you know, grow up sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the school itself was beautiful, I have to say.
And you're still out in the northeast at this
point?
Yeah,
still in the northeast at this stage. So living in Eltham, my kids were going to a beautiful school in sort of the north of Greensboro. And the school did a sex education kind of evening for the grade six kids and their parents. And I rock up there and there's a table of books, you know, the whole let's get the kids to read books. And one of the books is, I think it was Heather Has Two Mummies, it's called.
Right.
Beautiful. And
I'll put it on the reading list.
Yeah, do. And the principal and the vice principal, I just saw it and I looked at them, and because, you know, they knew my family situation, it was all good. And I just thought, how beautiful. I mean, that's wonderful, and that's what communities are about. Mm. And, you know, that sort of really counted for me, this woman and, you know, what she'd done. I was like, yeah.
Yeah. Coming out as a lesbian later in life, how did it affect you in the following ways? Did it affect you professionally?
Oh, that's a good question. Let me think. It didn't, in my mind. I actually took a break from, I had a corporate career growing up, bit of a yuppie, quite frankly, and that was in my 20s. And then I literally gave up work for a while when Sky, my oldest, was born, and started my own business and was doing some training, professional development work. So, you know, didn't impact that at all. When I went back to work, I went to radio,
right.
And started in radio. And no, it absolutely didn't, as far as I saw. Whether it did in the background, I couldn't honestly answer that. When I went for jobs, I actually leveraged my lesbian network, so it helped, to be honest. And, you know, when I went for one particular job, which was quite a high-profile job that I did before Joy, you know, and the founder there sort of, you know, gently asked about my family situation. Total acceptance, not a question.
Yeah.
No, that's drama.
That's why those things, if they do come up in job interviews, it's good because you're actually sounding them out for,
yeah,
yeah, are you
exactly
going to be cool?
Yeah.
What about socially? What happened to your immediate social network?
Most of them were really great, but one person that was a long time, you know, friend, like one of my best friends, basically, she couldn't accept it.
Right.
And I haven't seen her since, so that was a long time now. But with all my other friends, it was interesting because a lot of them are couples, you know, a lot of them very authentic Australians, you know, I would say is a nice way to, you know, explain that. And, you know, they were really good, like asking me questions. They wanted to ask questions and learn, and yeah, I was really open to that. And I'm like, yep, happy, you know, and they wanted to know all the, you know, yeah, nitty-gritty details,
yeah,
of how
well, we all do, yeah,
of how the relationship might work. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And I noticed at the start, you know, I watched them, they were observing me and my partner, and they were trying to see, they were trying to learn, they were curious. And I think what that taught me is, you know what, people do want to become aware.
Yep.
And when they're sometimes when they're pushed away from that, that can actually create, you know, barriers and make people become judgy versus teaching them. So I guess I took on that role of teaching them.
How do you think it impacted your mental health? Did you struggle making the decision and then subsequent to having made it?
Yeah, a little bit. It felt a bit lonely at times because, you know, when I was exploring my sexuality, I probably kept that to myself. So, you know, like suddenly 12 months later or whatever, I'm introducing people to a partner, you know, a new partner who's female. So I think they had to play catch up. And during that time, it was a little bit lonely because, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends who were gay. So it was like, right, okay. I didn't mind it, but yeah, it did impact, you know, my mental health. I think, you know, there was one or two times that I've experienced discrimination, and, you know, that hurts, you know, that really hurts. And
from your network or professionally?
No. Once was in rural Victoria, a place you and I have been to recently, and I had my kids with me and my partner, and we were going to go on a boat ride, and we wanted a family ticket, and the woman at the booth said, "You're not a family."
Oh.
And it was, you know, and my best friend, she was great. This is different to the other one, you know, and she jumped in and said, "How dare you say that?" You know, I was a bit gobsmacked. I was like,
yeah,
because that was my first direct experience of discrimination. I was like, what? Like, I was in shock. She jumped in and said, "What are you saying? Like, that's just ridiculous," you know. She wouldn't sell it to us in the end, you know. And I suppose, you know, from a mental health perspective, yeah, that stayed with me, you know.
Well, there's the next podcast. We're going to go to a Chickamauga and find that woman.
Totally.
Do you wish, Ange, that you'd done things differently or earlier?
At the time, it was the right choice. But if I was born, you know, today or a few years ago, I possibly would have, growing up, would have had girlfriends and boyfriends so that I learnt more about myself as a young person, you know, than I was able to.
Well, how did the conversation go with your then ex-husband? Was that the most difficult conversation to explain to him that you were now lesbian?
I didn't really have a big conversation with him, probably because we were still coming out of the relationship, you know, and dealing with the breakup and, you know, negotiating our way through to a family. But yeah, I mean, I introduced him to my new partner and, you know, I tried to reassure him at the time that this is not why our relationship broke up, because that would be wrong, you know, and a distraction to the real issues of, you know, why the relationship ended. I didn't dread it, although there was, you know, there was a little bit of friction around that, around could that be the reason, is it not? And, you know, differing opinions on that, I suppose, at the time. I didn't have that fear, Dee, of really being myself, and I think that was something to do with how I grew up. I can't quite put my finger on it, and I don't mean to be arrogant, because I know for a lot of people it's really hard to come out. It's so, so hard, so I don't want to minimise that.
I was reading some literature about people. There's sort of the telling the husband that you're now with a woman is a thing, and this one guy had said, I mean, from what I understand, what you're telling me is that there's no real sex. It's just lots of orgasms. Sounds hideous.
Oh, I love it. That's a great comment.
Yeah. Do you ever look at the young people today and go, oh, I wish I'd come out as a young thing?
Yeah, I do. I do. I look at the liberation, I think, you know, from being yourself. And obviously so much was, you know, impacting that religion, upbringing, all that sort of stuff. But I look at young people today and I think freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom of expression, far greater than what we had.
I think about it now, and I'm thinking about what you're saying about how you grew up, and you grew up, you know, without shoes on the river with a bunch of your own tribe of family, and how that gave you something within yourself to have the courage to do that later in life. I came out very young and just straight out because I didn't have enough life experience, or I hadn't seen enough hurt to make it an issue. Like I didn't even didn't have enough information about homophobia to think of it as a problem.
Yep.
I didn't have enough Catholicism, obviously, to consider that it was a sin. So it wasn't really, for me, an issue. It's only when I got into my late 20s I was thinking, geez, this is really, you know, that was a big thing.
Yeah.
And it informs your life. So I wonder, for women who are contemplating this later in life, if they've just overthinking it. Or the biggest fear, that's why I asked those questions about fear. What was the thing you feared the most, and did it happen?
Yep.
And I venture that most people fear the loss of their the love of their children, or their friendship groups, or financial or social, you know, collapse. And those things just might not happen.
Yes, exactly. Look, I totally agree with that, Dee, and I think that we need to believe in ourselves. Now, that's easier said for some of us than others, but that's probably what I got from childhood, was a belief in self and self-worth. Mm. And, you know, we are all worthwhile people, and, you know, whether it's our sexuality or our choice of religion even, or, you know, whatever it may be that we, you know, choose to identify with, at the base of that is... it's got to be backed by a belief in ourself, and actually our right to choose and our right to express who we are.
You've been listening to another Joy podcast with me, Dee Mason, made possible through the generous support of Lesbians Incorporated Australia. Big thanks to Joy CEO Ange Barry for her time and for her honesty. I really enjoyed that chat, and I hope that you did too. There are another 3 episodes in this series on later in life lesbians, so please seek them out wherever you found this one. If you want to find out more about Lesbians Inc. Australia, you can visit linkgrants.org.au. That's linkgrants.org.au, or find them on Facebook at Link Grants. If you want to hear more Joy podcasts, please head to joy.org.au/podcasts. This has been another Joy podcast, and don't forget, tune your radio to Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.